From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for this week ending Friday the 13th, July 13th.
Dun, dun, dun.
Ah, nice. In tune even for my two colleagues. Sitting here in our bureau across the street from the state capitol, I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, along with Anthony York from Capitol Weekly, and our senior pro bono political correspondent, Kate Fulmar.
Good morning.
We will have much more to say about Kate and her status at the end of this podcast, since some of you were so confused over the last week. But I'm like a tease on television news now. Let's just get to the headlines, shall we?
Yeah, let's.
So,
John Myers is like a tease. Let the record show.
On to this week's political story. See, I'm going to be good about censoring this podcast. Clearly, we should start with the budget, or lack thereof, of a budget. I have said, Anthony, since I harassed him with cueing tape back one time and showing his predictions, I've been saying now for several weeks, why is nobody freaked out about the budget? Why is nobody really making a big public stink about it? We're starting to get a little bit of that this week. Is that fair to say?
Yes, the start of the stink has begun. It started early in the week when the speaker, Fabian Nunez, was criticizing the governor for not calling a Big Five meeting. Which was followed by the governor calling a Big Five meeting. And now there's been lots of leadership shuffling back and forth. I think legislative leaders are meeting with each other, meeting with the governor, governor's senior staff. But it's unclear what, if anything, that has accomplished in terms of bridging the gap. I mean, the parameters for this debate have been, there's been about a $2 billion gap between where the Democrats are and the Republicans are in the legislature on the budget. And so they're going to have to find a way through a combination of whether it's revenue increases or cuts or just more deficit and moving things around to close the gap and get a budget.
If you are not a political insider, and if you're not, we're not really sure why you're listening to the podcast, but we're very happy that you're listening to the podcast. The Big Five would be the annual meetings between Governor Schwarzenegger, or the governor, any governor, and the four legislative leaders, in this case Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, Senate President Don Parada, and on the Republican team, Assembly Republican Leader Mike Belines, Senate Republican Leader Dick Ackerman.
Wow, gold star. Good job.
Excellent.
John Myers.
Explainer for anybody who's not crazy enough to do this all the time.
And usually this is the group that picks off the five, six, seven hardest budget issues. Usually the budget committees do the vast majority, 80, 90% of the budget, and then the sticking points wind up going to the so-called Big Five.
Well, and what's interesting about this budget, though, is do you guys have a sense of what the issues are? I mean, what we're talking about? I've heard this $2 billion figure bantied about, but
well, even the $2 billion figure is hard to completely track, I would argue, because it's theoretically made up. If you try to piece together all the different things Republicans have said, it's made up of partly the governor's May revision budget, spending $1 billion too much, and Democrats adding $1 billion too much in spending through the conference committee process. And mm-hmm. So Republicans keep talking about $2 billion, but I think this is the first week, and Anthony, you were talking about all the events of the week. This is also the first week where we started to get some sense of what Republicans say they would do, but not enough. Right. I mean, as of late week, they were publicly saying, well, let's restrain growth, and then a few on condition of background, which is always fun, would say, well, we're talking about maybe slowing down the cost of living increases for the UC and CSU system.
That'll get you $2 billion.
Well, I was going to say exactly, but budget watchers say, well, that doesn't get you $2 billion. And we also went through this entire he said, she said thing at the end of the week about had Republicans given a list of proposed cuts to Democrats. Democrats said they had. Republicans said they hadn't. Democrats said we can't release it to you. We had this huge hubbub there. But, I mean, I do wonder if this is A, substantive in some ways, but B, this is that ongoing issue of Republicans and their feeling about the governor and their feeling about the way that business has been going over the last year at the state capitol.
I think that this is, I mean, the joke in the capitol, as you two both know, and probably our six listeners also know, is that seven, excellent, is that according to Nielsen or...
Hi, Mom.
But the joke in the Capitol is that the only thing that that you really need the Republicans for is the budget and the annual legislative baseball game.
Yes.
And this is where this is the time of maximum leverage for the minority party. And I do wonder how much of this is symptomatic of Republicans feeling like, you know, their own governor is barely a Republican and he completely disregards them, and they get rolled by the Democrats all the time. And I wonder how much of this is symbolic and how much of it actually has to do with a deep and abiding concern about overspending.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good question. But there was also another slight twist that maybe I'm reading too much into, but that's what we do in the media, which was that Republicans have been saying, well, we need to deal with the out-year problem. And for those of you who aren't budget wonks, it largely means we need to deal with what the deficit projections are going to be for the coming fiscal year. Republicans are saying, well, let's deal with that this year. Well, Democrats are saying this is this year's budget, not next year's budget. But this week, when the governor spoke, I believe it was at his healthcare event in Los Angeles, and he was asked about the budget, and he said something to the effect of, well, we want to make sure we don't have a problem for next year, which almost was somewhat of the Republican mantra, which I think could make negotiations somewhat difficult if you are trying to deal with a problem next year as well, even though the governor's own proposed budget had some problems for next year.
Well, the Republicans have their own problems with the governor's budget, but one of the big divisions between the Democrats and the governor, there were two real big ones. One, I think, was the use of the transportation account, so-called spillover, which we don't need to get into. But another one was the governor wanted to accelerate the repayment of these bonds that were taken out in 2004.
Proposition 57,
right?
Bonds.
And that might be what the governor's talking about when he's talking about looking in the out year. That's a division that still exists. The Democrats want to use that money for the budget hole this year. And Governor Schwarzenegger has wanted to accelerate the repayment of that debt. So I don't know if that's what the governor's talking about or if he's talking about something more along the lines of what the Republicans are dealing with in terms of caseload growth on a lot of social programs that are going to cost the state more and more money in the years to come.
And the vagueness is somewhat interesting in itself as a story, just because we are 13 days at this point when we're taping this, 13 days into a new fiscal
right.
year,
mm-hmm.
and we still don't seem to have a coherent discussion about what's going on. And we've all staked
right.
out these budget negotiations in the past, much to our chagrin, sometimes sitting in hallways
yeah.
waiting for them to go. But at least we had a sense of what the moving parts were. Mm-hmm. It was this program or that program, or we want a little more of this. It's hard to figure out what it is.
It does seem very opaque this year.
And that speaks to Kate's point about whether Valance just needs to do this to prove a point, and that whether there are some other issues, Mike Valance, the Assembly Republican leader, mm-hmm. Or whether there are some issues of pride or respect that are factoring into this.
Mm-hmm.
And, Democrats that I talk to, I hear this refrain a lot saying Valance knew he had to hold up the budget. Now he's just got to figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And, if we're digging in for a long standoff, then it's going to increase the pressure on Republicans to at least articulate why we don't have a spending plan.
And a little bit of backstory here, and I have not talked to Mike Valance about this. I don't know what his personal motivation is. So that's on a sabbatical.
Story.
Yes, this is speculation on my part. But part of the backstory is that Valance was voted in by the Assembly GOP caucus. And replaced a man named George Plesha from San Diego County, who his caucus was widely unhappy with him because they thought that he just gave in too quickly to the administration and acceded to too many demands and didn't fight for core Republican principles. So it may well be that Valance needs to hold the line on this.
Definitely an issue there. And I had heard rumblings at the end of the week, and I don't know, Anthony, if you'd heard any of this as well, that on the Senate side, there's also going to be a leadership contest probably
right.
for the Republican caucus in the Senate. And how is that impacting what happens on the budget here? You've got the two widely believed folks who want that job as Senate Republican leader, Dave Cogdill from the Central Valley
right.
and George Runner from Southern California. And how might that dynamic of leadership, movements and people and the current leader, Dick Ackerman from Irvine, how does he deal with all of these things get played into a budget? It has nothing to do with money then.
Right.
It has to do politics and what happens after.
Although, the Republicans only need, the Democrats only need two votes, two Republican votes. I think, or the governor needs two Republican votes in the Senate. I think there's probably some regret now that the governor didn't do more for Abel Maldonado during the campaign season.
State senator from the Central Coast, who
I don't think is going to go out of his way this year to help the governor out.
Yeah, the backstory there, if you're not familiar with that, is Maldonado was running for statewide office.
For state controller.
Yes, right? And lost in the primary to a more conservative Republican, Tony Strickland, who went on to lose the general election. Right. But Maldonado had kind of been seen as a buddy, for right. lack of a better term, of Schwarzenegger. Right. And a lot of people wondered why the
governor... A reliable vote and somebody who would cross lines occasionally right. to vote with Democrats to make Schwarzenegger things happen.
I mean, it just feels like that, and this is something, too, that I think is a dynamic that people who've watched budgets happen for a while, you know, especially, well, it's not just the Gray Davis era, but let's use the Gray Davis era since...
Are we still in that era? I can't right. quite figure out because...
Nope.
Check the administration. How about that?
Well, that would be hard if okay. you looked at the governor's right. appointees. But in former Governor Davis's era, especially toward the end, you really had the pick off enough Republican votes to get the budget passed. What can I give Republican X or Republican Y in
Mojo.
The district? What do they get? You know, it's the Mike Briggs, former assemblyman from Fresno kind mm-hmm. of mentality where he got a particular thing for his district, a tax break, mm-hmm. and it helped him vote for the budget.
Maurice Johansson,
Mojo from the North Coast. So the question is, or from Northern California, okay. so the question is, does Arnold Schwarzenegger have to go pick off Republican votes this year? Does he have to go do... He hasn't had to do that. If you look at the way these budgets have passed before, it's not like there have been huge numbers of Republicans okay. that have voted for them, but he hasn't had to go do the individual plucking and making deals. Is this finally the year, maybe?
And if he does, what does that say about the era of post-partisanship? I mean, the governor has sort of taken it as a point of pride that it hasn't been the bare minimum 54 votes in the Assembly, 27 votes in the Senate. There's been a cushion in terms of getting these budgets passed. And if we do see a bare minimum sort of individual plucking going on, I mean, I think that sort of is one more dagger in this idea that partisanship is dead in the Capitol.
And then I think the other dynamic, just quickly, that I am curious about is what role the governor does play in this. We were talking about this before we began the podcast, out in our lobby here, ladies and gentlemen, how in 2004, Arnold Schwarzenegger's first budget negotiation, he got frustrated with the process, started doing campaign events up and down the state, called the Democrats girly men. We all know where that went. But they got the budget passed, but it was late. 2005, it was in the middle of the positioning for the big special election where he got his teeth kicked in later in the fall, and it was late, and there was problems, and there was clashing. Last year, everybody had a feel-good. It was a kumbaya year. Because
everyone except Phil Angelides.
Everybody yes. except Phil Angelides, yes. the Democrat running for governor, but the governor was running for re-election. Everybody came together. They made a deal.
And it was almost on time.
But so what is his relevance this year? I mean, you know, the governor's style has started to tend toward the, let's let the legislature negotiate, mm-hmm. and then I'll come in at the last minute, rather than getting actively involved. But at a certain point, if they're at loggerheads, and then if he does come in, how much sway does he have? Because we've already talked about his relationship with Republicans in the legislature.
The governor's involved. I mean, yesterday he met with Mike Vellante. I mean, there are discussions going on in the smoking tent. The governor, Chris Kahn, the legislative secretary for the governor, is very involved in these negotiations. It's not like, you know, these talks are happening in a vacuum and Schwarzenegger is waiting to engage.
But it's more behind the scenes than it used to be. It's the show of it is
where the reporters are summoned, that there's going to be a big five photo op. Yeah. That's not going on. But, you know, I mean, yesterday we caught Dick Akerman walking out of the speaker's office and saw Mike Vellante walking into the governor's office. I mean, there's a level of activity. There's chatter, I guess, you know, using the it's code level orange out there in terms of the budget. The governor's engaged. How successful he's going to be in convincing Republicans to play ball, I don't know.
Final question for either of you. What do you think, you know, let's play crystal ball, which always gets us in trouble. I won't play the tape back, Anthony. Don't worry. I won't.
A likely story.
But, yeah, the radio guy. But what might we see? You know, Republicans are going to ultimately, let's just face facts, probably have to give in on some things. I already got signals at the end of the week that they had dropped their notion that the governor's CalWORKs reworking plan should be part of it. That would be a reworking where some people would be kicked out of the CalWORKs welfare-to-work system. Democrats have said that's not going to happen. And legislative Republicans for at least a few days had said, well, maybe we should look at that plan. By Thursday, you know, they were telling me, no, we know it's a sacred cow for Democrats. We're not going to ask for it. So what do Republicans get out of this? Is there anything substantive you think they'll get?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that one of the areas that I think there's likely to be a bending is on this issue of funding for public transportation. Democrats have sort of drew a line after the May revision saying the cut, whether you want to call it a cut, is kind of a political debate, but of more than $1 billion in public transit funding. The Speaker and President Pro Tem Parada have talked about wanting to maintain that funding. I think some of that's going to have to get taken out of transit and used for whether it's early repayment of the bonds or other programs. I don't know what Republicans get out of this.
Stay tuned. We'll see what happens. And I think just before, as we wrap up our prediction of the summer vacation getting a budget, which will be next week, I'm not feeling very good about that.
I'm not either, but I'm not moving.
I still think it could happen. I think that the desire to be able to take a vacation is a powerful, powerful motivator. We've all seen them bring a budget together in a few days when they have to, and then vote on it within 5 seconds.
Budget put up for vote early next week. The Democrats putting it up there, but
I hope there's a lock-in too. You think there'll be a lock-in? Yeah, that's the best.
You're just saying that because you won't have to cover it.
Exactly.
The life of a pro bono reporter. Let's go to topic two here, and which topic two is a bit of an omnibus topic, which was this was another one of those constitutional deadline weeks for bills to get out of the policy committee of the second house that they were in. If you can follow that, if Bill X began in the assembly and it made it to the Senate, it had to get out of its policy committee by this week or else it was dead for this year. So with that in mind, Anthony, you were watching some bills. I mean, we've got some big ones here, but there's one in particular, even though we're kind of back into this.
You're
looking at me confused.
I'm with you.
That you wrote about in Capital Weekly, which is kind of an interesting dynamic that has to deal with what, Homeland Security?
Right, or emergency services, depending on how you look at it. There was a proposed merger authored by Assemblyman Pedro Nava, chairman of the Transportation Committee, a Democrat from Santa Barbara, that would merge the Office of Homeland Security, State Office of Homeland Security, with the State Office of Emergency Services. This is something that's been worked on, negotiated for 3 years. Nava has taken the lead on these talks, has both of the bureaucracies are on board. The governor is on board. This bill has sailed through the assembly without a single no vote and was derailed this week. It was dragged into Senate Public Safety, where it was killed by the committee chairwoman, Senator Gloria Romero from Los Angeles, and Senator Gil Cedillo, also a Democrat from Los Angeles.
Why was it killed?
that's a good question. I think it's a mixture of politics and personality. There's a lot of tension.
And not policy.
Did I skip policy?
Yes. You did.
Oh, well, I guess policy too.
But go to the other
one. Three P's.
Go,
there's a lot of tension and rivalry between the houses. Senator Romero lost one of her pet bills in Assembly Public Safety this year. And there's been some residual consequences from that. Also, I think Senator Cedillo had a lot to do with this. The office of Senator Cedillo has been a major proponent of driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. The chief opposition from any state, from any governmental organization, has come from the State Office of Homeland Security. They've been the major opponents of Cedillo's bill. And I think this is payback a little bit. I think Cedillo is saying, hey, look, if you guys are going to treat every immigrant as a terrorist, I don't want you in charge of emergency services. And so this is something Homeland Security wants, and Cedillo sees a chance for payback, and I think that's some of what's going on.
I think it's interesting. You know, you could call this inside baseball, and it's just much ado about nothing, whatever. But I do think it tells a larger truth. There's a larger story here, which is that, you know, there are ramifications of policy disagreements. And you can't take an agency or an arm of state government that opposes issue X, and then the lawmaker who believes issue X is paramount is willing to give that agency the benefit of the doubt. I mean, so, you know, depending, you know, some of us call us political junkies, but I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, that is part of the larger truth of how government works.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of this, too. I mean, and that's true not just about government agencies, also individual members who don't put up votes on other people's bills. There was some carnage this week of various bills, and I think we'll see much, much more as these bills move to the floor of the opposite house towards the end of session in August.
Anthony, what's the policy goal of this? I mean, what good would be accomplished by merging the two?
The idea is to streamline these two major bureaucracies,
because
there's a lack of coordination.
Okay.
There's some overlap. Homeland Security basically gets a lot of the money. You know, they qualify for a lot of the federal money.
Oh, sure, all the federal grants.
And emergency services they're the first responders, and they're the people that actually deliver the service. So, and there's communication between bureaucracies is notoriously bad, and so there's some thought that by creating some Uber agency, that it will help in some of this. I don't know if that works so well on the federal level.
And again, interesting, because this thing had sailed through the process all the way until now. I mean, it was huge bipartisan support and votes. Did it not? I mean,
yeah, it hasn't. It's had hearings in the Assembly GO Committee, Assembly Appropriations, the Assembly floor, Senate GO Committee, and Senate Public Safety. It's only received one no vote. And that's from Romero, and that was enough to derail it.
And then Cedillo abstained?
As did Mark Ridley Thomas, the other Democrat from Los Angeles, on the Public Safety Committee. Five-member committee, needs three votes to get out, only got the two Republicans.
Let's mention two other bills that went through the process this week. One went through it, one stopped with the process. First, quickly, health care, which, of course, is a huge issue this year. The bill from the Democratic leadership, the now... combined bill from Speaker Nunez and Senator Parada
in that order.
I'll let that one stand. From the two Democratic leaders, which is a big health care reform plan, made its way through the Senate Health Committee this week. Of course, it was in it, an interesting little dynamic there, in that the chairwoman of the committee, Sheila Kuehl, Democrat from Santa Monica, is the longtime main proponent of a much more universal, much more broader health care reform plan, which, as she said, as the bill went up forward, I like my bill better, but I'm going to support your bill. Interesting, I think, about that bill, not so much that it passed through the committee, but that there is a growing, what would we call the moderate coalition of businesses in California, led by the CEO of Safeway.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hurd.
Steve Hurd. And they this week said they are opposed in the current form of the Democratic bill. And they are close, and as the governor went down to see them this week, the governor is close to this group of moderate businesses. And so you wonder what negotiating position is going to have to come there. There's some details they talked about they want more people to be covered, a few other different things. You know, again, these are issues that have been on the table for a while. You know, how many people are guaranteed coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So that was one. And
now to the truly important bill.
Now to the truly important, or truly... I mean, this has got to be nobody measures this, but this has got to be the bill that's gotten the most.
It's the talker, isn't it? It's just the talker of the year.
This year, emails, faxes, letters. What did they get? Like several thousand? Anthony is impaling himself over here.
Yes.
Just doesn't want to talk about it. The spay and neuter bill, requiring pets to be spayed and neutered. Assembly Bill 1634 did not make
requiring most pets to be spayed and neutered.
Pets.
Your turtle is fine.
Most cats and dogs.
My turtle. I had a turtle when I was a kid. Different story.
Different podcast.
But that bill has been shelved. It did not die. The author, Lloyd Levine, Democratic Assemblyman from L.A.
Come on, John. No, it wasn't shelved. It was euthanized, or it was neutered, or come on. Come on, radio guy. Come on.
The cliches are just bounding off the side of the desk. But largely, I mean, this bill ran into what I think ultimately is the problem, is that there's not a middle ground. The people who are opposed to it don't want a mandatory spay and neuter plan.
Much like in neutering itself, there is no middle ground.
And Bob Barker, the former host of The Price is Right, was here to try to lobby for it. And I watched him walk in the halls and trying to go into doorways and, going to lawmakers and talk to them. And it was a strange week. But that bill just not going to go anywhere.
Why do you think that happened? Why do you think it died?
Well, again, I think there's no middle ground. There's just... I don't know how you can amend that bill down to make this huge swath of people who are opposed to it unopposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most fascinating things, just quickly, was how the State Association of Veterinarians, which had been a supporter of the bill, pulled their support about 10 days ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
Largely, in one way, they say they pulled it because the bill still didn't meet what they needed. You know, there was too many burdens about spaying and neutering the pets. But there were allegations on the side of supporters of the bill that the veterinarians were being heavily intimidated, harassed, lobbied, pushed by this huge anti-spay-neuter coalition. to get off the bill, and that they got, you know, they got a little tired of that and backed off. I don't know. It's, again, another one of those. That's the way politics works.
I must say, of all the issues that have come before the state of California, as long as I've been covering state politics, I don't think I've ever seen as much attention, whether it's from lobbying groups, you know, the amount of mail that we receive, the number of books of dog poetry around a single piece of legislation. I mean, it's amazing what motivates people. Really,
and, you know, people care about their pets,
well, their pets
and they feel they feel really passionately about it, which is
but
why
not about their health care. Right?
No, so. Which is why so many newspapers run dog stories on the front page.
In full disclosure, my dog Lola is spayed. So just thought I'd out her there. I don't think she'd like that.
My in honor of my cat's privacy,
I
will not tell you about Scout status.
No pets. A couple of plants, some tomatoes.
It's not a very convincing no.
I have a ferret, okay? No, I don't. I don't have a
You would have something in common with the governor, but that's a different movie. Well, anyway.
Isn't that illegal to have a ferret?
He vetoed the ferret bill.
Yeah.
That's true.
Repeatedly.
Kindergarten cop notwithstanding.
Yeah.
We have totally degenerated.
Much as he appreciates their acting talent. Yep.
This is just no coffee talk, but anyway, it's okay. Well, before we end, our final word, our last word is, what should it be, Kate? Give me the last word for this podcast.
Sabbatical.
Now, as many of you will know, last week we referred to our good friend here, Ms. Fulmar, as senior political correspondent for the Capital Notes podcast. Several of you, probably 85% of the podcast audience, given we think it's small.
Three of you.
about five or six, commented to me that they thought that meant that Kate now worked for my news organization, KQED. Mm-hmm. However,
KQED, if you're listening, that would be okay.
We only pay in tote bags, though, so, you know, it's not really dollars. So, Ms. Fulmar, take it away.
I was one of the folks laid off by the San Jose Mercury News. So I am the pro bono senior political correspondent for Capital Notes right now.
Pro bono.
In the interest of full disclosure.
Yes.
And KQED general manager, call me.
I'll place a call to her. If you know of an excellent journalism endeavor, okay, never mind.
Ixnay on the Endeavor A. Okay. Yeah.
Kate doesn't want me to give a promo for her, but you can find me, jmyers@kqed.org. I'll forward you how to get a hold of Kate. But Kate is our trusted analyst here, and one day we'll attach her to a organization afterwards. Maybe you can start your own paper.
Not.
There you go. And that's a wrap.
Let me advise against that.
Speaking from the man who's running his own newspaper over there. Words of wisdom. Okay, Kate's blushing. It's time to wrap this thing up. That'll do it for this edition of the Capital Notes podcast. For our pro bono political correspondent, Kate Fulmar, and Anthony York of Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.